Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back to Family Talk. Family Talk is the radio home of Dr. James Dobson and the flagship program of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. Well, for today, we are continuing with part two of a classic conversation we started and presented to you yesterday. It featured Dr. Dobson and pediatricians Dr. Paul Reiser, Dr. Bob Mann, and Dr. Marianne Nelson. The topic, parenting basics, focusing on the toddler and toddlerhood. So the question, what exactly is toddlerhood? Well, it varies. There is no precise definition of this pediatric term or age range, but in general, if you have a toddler, you know you're in toddlerhood. It's often considered anywhere between 1 and 3 years of age. I like to call it the wobbly years. Let me start with a question for you. Do you and your spouse have a young one, or maybe a couple of little kiddos wobbling around in your house? Or maybe your kids are now having kids, and they are in that season of life with children literally underfoot. Well, new parent or grandparent leaning in and helping watch and raise toddlers, I bet you have your hands full. Welcome to toddlerhood. Let me tell you a little bit about our expert panel and give you some context on what they discussed yesterday and where we'll be headed for today's program. Dr. Paul Reiser is a retired family practitioner. He served as lead author of the books The Complete Guide to Family Health, Nutrition, and Fitness and the bestseller The Complete Guide to Baby and Child Care. Next on our panel, Dr. Bob Mann, currently serving as the senior physician at Cook's Children's Hospital in Mansfield, Texas. He is the founding board member of Mission Arlington Mission Metroplex, where a medical clinic was named in his honor. And finally, rounding out our panel, Dr. Marianne Nelson, a family medicine specialist who lives and practices pediatrics in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Dr. Nelson is affiliated with Mercy Medical Center and St. Luke's Hospital. Yesterday on the program, our panel shared with Dr. Dobson some of the ins and outs of how to handle some of the key issues every parent with a toddler faces, from the toddler's first checkups, expected diet, exploring new foods, creating a healthy framework for food that doesn't become a power struggle, or even just those finicky eating habits. They also covered the predictable defiance and independence traits in those first years as baby becomes toddler and toddler becomes child. Our medical experts even discussed the necessary hours of sleep your toddler should be getting. They also unpacked attachment and separation issues affecting the toddler for you, your spouse, your extended family, heck, even the sitter to understand and to manage. Well then, there is a lot of information to connect the dots today. Yesterday, as you'll recall, our panel closed by touching upon parental burnout, and that's exactly where we will pick things up right now. They're also going to offer sage advice on how to select childcare, how to do the vetting process. That is, in fact, the number one issue on the minds of many new parents these days as they're returning back to work. How to select for and pay for childcare. Sound interesting? Well, without further ado, let's go there right now as Dr. Dobson continues.
You know, this is a subject that I've been very concerned about for some time, parental burnout, because I think it's a bigger problem than people realize. Parenting is a marathon. You know, it's not a sprint, and you have to find a pace that you can keep. You've got to get into a routine that won't drain your batteries to the point that you can't start the engine. And I see a lot of parents doing that. And in fact, the more you care, the more you love your kids, the more dedicated you are to that task, the higher the probability of burning out. And so there has to be time away. And women especially must resist the temptation to pull in a kind of an isolated cloister with those kids and never get out and never get away. You're draining the batteries. You've got to find a way to recharge them. And I know you all feel the same way.
Absolutely. It's bad enough, Jim, in a family that has just normal, healthy kids. But so many families, moms that are taking care of special needs kids, they're sent home from intensive care nurseries on monitors and multiple doses of medication every day. Kids with severe congenital handicaps and families.
Or just ADD kids who are just very, very ADHD kids who are very hyperactive. Yeah.
And those children where the parents need the most relief are the ones that there's also the hardest time finding appropriate sitters for.
Yeah. Speaking of sitters, finding childcare is a real problem today, and that which you trust and that which you have confidence in, that which is clean and safe. I, in the early days, was opposed to child care centers because I wanted mothers to do that job. But there are many single parents out there who absolutely have to work. There are other parents where the financial situation is such that they have to go back to work. That's their decision. They have to make that decision. And in those cases, there does have to be good, safe child care. Where do they find it today?
Well, I think the first thing is to remind everyone who's going to be making this kind of decision to think about the big picture. Now, I realize for the single parent, there may be no choice. In some families, though, there maybe is a little bit of play in the question of how much income do we need versus how much time can we spend with our kids. But also to remember that when kids are young, especially at this age, it really is important for them to be cared for primarily by people who are passionately and sacrificially concerned about them. And
you can't hire that.
You can't always hire that. Sometimes you can get close, but this isn't to make anyone feel guilty. And believe me, this book talks all about all the options. But to keep that basic idea in mind, and if possible, to spend the majority of the waking hours, especially in the early years, with one of their own parents or someone else who is equally committed to them, to their well-being. Now, granted, there's all kinds of variations on the theme, and there may be situations where, I hate to say it, but in some families where a very irresponsible parent is not going to do as good a job as a caring relative. Unfortunately, that's the case. Hopefully, that isn't for most of our listeners. When the time comes to look at the whole issue of childcare, where we're really going to go with this, a variety of options might be available. Maybe somebody can come into the house and spend time with the child during the course of the day. A nanny, an au pair, a relative, someone along those lines. Sometimes there's an option of a small group home situation where a few children are cared for by a family, and perhaps you have a possibility there of a little more attention to each child by the individual. But again, you may have to worry about who is this? Are they properly trained to do what they're going to do?
Well, there have been a number of stories in the newspapers and in the media recently about tragedies that have occurred in various child care settings. Even one murder trial that caught our attention. And parents are uneasy about that now, and for good reason. They're afraid to even bring a nanny into the house. What red flags would you say parents should look for? How should they evaluate the child care possibilities in their own environment?
Whether it's in their own home or outside of their home, I think the most critical thing is who is the person or the people involved. Do you feel comfortable with this person taking care of your child? Is this person look comfortable and relaxed around your child? What prior experience do they have? Do they have any references? On the negative side, you'd be looking for things like, do you have a child that becomes upset or fearful if they're going to a particular caregiver? And it doesn't seem like their behavior is normal if they've been there before and now they don't want to go again. Does the caregiver look impatient and stressed and hassled? One that I always make a big point about is, does the caregiver encourage the parent, whether this is a child care center or a home, does the caregiver encourage the parent just to drop in any old time? Because some of them are a little antsy about that, and they want to get things straightened up. But the fact is, you ought to be able to walk in any time and find things in reasonable order.
Some people put video cameras in the home so they can watch it any time, and it's picked up on the internet. I don't know, that probably makes babysitter uncomfortable, but might not be a bad
idea. I've had some of the moms in my practice do that, and the vast majority of the time they've been very pleased with what they saw.
I have a view on this that I get in trouble. I get criticized for saying every time I've said it, and I'll say it on the air as long as we're doing this program. I know that some people strongly disagree with me. For all I know, you all may. But I would never ask a teenage boy to babysit with little girls. The sexual drive, the sexual curiosity is just too powerful in those adolescent years. I wouldn't put either one of them at that risk.
I agree totally. There may be a 15-minute thing where there's an emergency or something like that, but not for a standard sitting sort of situation.
I think you're just asking for it. You agree?
I think that's great wisdom.
It just is an unnecessary risk. Anything else, Paul, there that you want to comment on?
I got one other comment on that. You can do everything right and still get burned. You can have somebody with excellent references, excellent credentials, someone you've even had good experience with, and still find that carelessness or deception or something else is going on. Recently, in our family, we have a granddaughter who has diabetes. So my daughter and son-in-law were out, and my wife went over to see that the shot was given at 8 o'clock at night while a sitter was there. Well, my 5-year-old granddaughter was out sitting on the front porch waiting for my wife to show up right near a very busy street, and my wife went on into the house, and the sitter had absolutely no idea where the 5-year-old was.
Incredible.
Now, Bob has mentioned a sitter, and we've talked about daycares and sitters, and they're really kind of different issues.
Yes.
A sitter is going to be there a short time, and a daycare is perhaps a long-term arrangement. But I think it's good to make the point that you may spend a lot of time pre-screening your daycare and checking the facilities and make sure they're safe and that everybody's doing the right thing and they're sanitary and the people and all that, and then leave your child for an evening with somebody that you barely know. And that question of, hey, would you leave this person your car? Would you let them, house sit for you? This is the most precious thing in your life. Are they capable of doing the job that you need to do?
And so, one of the saddest events in life, and I've seen it and I know you all have too, is where a parent trusts a child, even a little older child, to somebody, and then that child is sexually abused or in some way not taken care of properly, and then you feel guilty the rest of your life.
It's every parent's utter nightmare to think of that happening. And I think there's nothing more important than to spend a little time with whoever this is going to be. And it may be a teenage girl. This is the common babysitting cadre. And really get to know them. If it's nice to get references. It's nice to interview them. Let them spend a little time with your child. And when you get a good one, pay them. Pay them real good. Make them... let them know that you appreciate the kind of work that they're doing, and reward them. And you'll have somebody who will be ready in a minute if you need them.
Well, this is Roger Marsh, and you're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. We are in the middle of a fascinating conversation. Actually, we like to call it a panel discussion, or a roundtable, if you will. It's hosted by Dr. James Dobson, of course, and joined by three experts in the field of child and baby development. They are all pediatricians, and their names are Dr. Paul Reiser, Dr. Bob Mann, and Dr. Marianne Nelson. Each of these medical professionals have devoted their careers to studying, caring for, and treating babies, toddlers, and young children. Dr. Paul Reiser is a retired family practitioner. He served as lead author of The Complete Guide to Family Health, Nutrition, and Fitness, in addition to the bestseller called Complete Guide to Baby and Child Care. Dr. Bob Mann serves as the senior physician at Cook Children's Hospital in Mansfield, Texas. He is the founding board member of Mission Arlington, Mission Metroplex, where a medical clinic is actually named in his honor. And last but certainly not least, a kind woman and an experienced pediatrician, Dr. Marianne Nelson, rounds out our panel. She's a family medicine specialist based in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Dr. Nelson is affiliated with Mercy Medical Center and St. Luke's Hospital there in the Cedar Rapids area. Well, we have a lot of material yet to cover on the world of toddlers and how parents can navigate and survive and thrive this season in toddlerhood together with those precious children whose care has been entrusted to them by our Creator. Now, that bears mentioning for sure. So let's go back to this conversation right now. Here once again is Dr. Dobson.
Now, in our earlier discussions, there was just a passing reference to ear infections, which are very common at 2 years of age. How serious are they? How seriously should we take them? And what about just fevers at that age from the viruses and bugs that come along? Give us some guidance on that.
Ear infections are very common through infancy and through toddler ages. They are serious in the sense that while a child does have an active infection or fluid in the inner ear, which often follows infection sometimes for many weeks, during that time their hearing is not correct. And it's somewhat like hearing underwater during that period of time. So the learning curve is down while there is not excellent hearing.
Is damage done to the hearing, permanent damage during that time?
It's very uncommon that there would be any permanent damage done to the hearing, but it does cause problems with the learning curve. Also, there's the concern about a lot of antibiotic use, and there's a lot lately that's come out about resistant organisms and numerous antibiotics, and we're concerned about that. We want antibiotics prescribed when there actually is an infection, but if there just is fluid in the inner ear, that does not always necessitate having an antibiotic administered.
Can any of the ear infections go into secondary infections that can be much more serious?
Yes, they can. Ear infections oftentimes correspond to sinus infections, and sometimes there then would be bronchitis that would come kind of all rolled into one.
Any link to encephalitis?
It would be extremely unusual, but yes, especially in very tiny infants, ear infections can lead to encephalitis, but that generally isn't a problem in the age group.
So you don't want to ignore them?
No, you don't want to ignore them.
In this age group, you're going to be seeing a lot of colds. You're just going to see a lot of colds. Maybe as many as 6 or 8 a year.
I've got one right now, as you can hear.
Yes, right.
Well, partly because they're out and about a lot more
than
they used to be.
They're with other kids, or if they're in daycare, it is well documented that they are going to get more upper respiratory infections.
And not only more, but oftentimes harder to treat, because these kiddos are already in a situation where many of them are on multiple antibiotics, and so you're going to find the more resistant germs in a daycare situation.
Right. But nevertheless, we do encourage parents not to get too carried away on insisting that Johnny needs an antibiotic, because if he doesn't get his amoxicillin or whatever, he's going to get this or that. We really need to see the infection going before we jump in with that for all of these reasons.
Would you criticize the medical profession for giving antibiotics too quickly and too often in the past?
I think that we're all under that pressure in an office, because we all want to do something. Yeah. And there's often that feeling, well, he got an antibiotic, so the visit was really worth it. And just to tell the mom, no, it's okay, it's a virus, and just some simple things to do at home, it'll go away, really does not satisfy a lot of parents. They want something more done. And there is this magic bullet kind of effect. And the pharmaceutical manufacturers have come out with some really dandy antibiotics. They cover, we call them, Godzilla-cillin, they cover everything. And they are now, unfortunately, they're very effective. But we are seeing more and more very scary resistance patterns developing in the community.
Are we at this time in the heyday of our ability to control microorganisms? Will a generation from now we have fewer antibiotics that will control infectious disease because of that desensitization process?
I wouldn't say heyday. I think we may be past the heyday, at least what it appears to be now, that it is much more difficult to create new and better antibiotics, and we maybe 10 years ago was the heyday. We may have peaked.
So that there may be strains coming that we can't treat.
Yes, but one bit of good news, there has been some work in Europe where there are concerted efforts to downscale the antibiotic use in certain countries, and they have found that the bacteria are retreating in terms of the sensitivities, that they are becoming more sensitive again. So I think it is possible to back off that hardcore resistant bug pattern, but it's a big social issue. It's going to take a lot of doctors making a lot of different decisions.
So the bottom line for what we're saying to parents right now is don't insist on an antibiotic. Take the advice of your physician.
Right.
In your day-by-day practice, I'm sure you see many childhood diseases and problems that are not that serious, that even if you didn't take any action, the child is going to do pretty well. What do you worry about most when a child comes in with a particular set of symptoms? Disease or development causes the greatest alarm for you? What do you need to jump on the fastest?
One of the more common illnesses that is very important to look for carefully is urinary tract infection. And that can present very obviously in the case of a bladder infection, where there would be very frequent voiding, perhaps bloody urine, pain with urination. Those signs are very obvious. But the
more common in girls than boys?
It is more common in girls in the age 1 and up years than it would be in boys. It's different in the first few months of life. However, the harder urinary tract illness to identify is when it involves the kidneys. Kidney infection does not give what we call the lower tract symptoms. It does not give the frequent urination, the burning with the urination, or the blood in the urination, but it does often present more like a flu with high fever or fussiness. Just generally, this child is not feeling well, and you absolutely can find nothing on physical exam to explain the presentation, and that's when it's incredibly important to look for urinary tract infection.
I can speak to that from personal experience. My daughter at 3 ran 103 fever for 2 or 3 or 4 days. I don't know how long it was. I was watching her, figured didn't see anything going wrong till she just got sicker and sicker, and she had a full-blown kidney infection that was not declared by any other symptom other than fever and just getting more and more lethargic.
Well, this is Roger Marsh stepping in here as we close today's broadcast and offering a big thank you to you, Dr. Dobson, and also a thank you to our panel of guests, pediatricians Dr. Paul Reiser, Dr. Bob Mann, and Dr. Marianne Nelson for this special edition of Family Talk. The timeless truths and best practices that you all have shared are surely going to benefit a new generation of young parents who are starting out on this journey. And if you fall in that category, as Dr. Dobson said, remember, this is a marathon and not a sprint. So we are sending prayers and admiration your way, Mom and Dad. And remember, if you need a resource, we have you covered here at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. Check out our resources page for books and materials on just about every subject you can imagine associated with raising a child. Go to drjamesdobson.org, look for the toolbar, click Resources, and then click Store. You'll be amazed at what you find there. All of Doctor's classic books and more. That's drjamesdobson.org. Hit the word Resources, and then click Store. You know, I was thinking so much as listening to the past couple of days' programs, thinking about how much I appreciate the sage wisdom that the panel of experts have been giving us, but also reminded, too, of all the sage wisdom that I received just from other parents and grandparents when I was starting out in the parenting journey. Lisa and I are the parents of 6 children between our 2 families, and I'll tell you what, there are times when you sit there and pray that the potty training goes well, so you don't have to deal with diapers anymore. You step on 1 too many Legos or Matchbox cars, and you begin to ask, oh my goodness, well, is this ever going to end? And then, of course, when it comes to fussy eaters, 3 fussy eaters, 3 not so fussy eaters, which ones are good at taking naps, that type of thing. You know, I realize that raising kids in the 80s and 90s is a whole lot different than what parents are going through right now. But I'll tell you what, I'm still going to say this. Getting kids potty trained, probably the best part of toddlerhood, because I don't miss the diapers, and I'm sure you won't either. But I'll tell you what, this is a topic that is so very, very important for us as grandparents now to be able to have with our kids in terms of the children that they are raising, the next generation of the faith tradition in all of our households. Well, we hope that you found our discussion on parenting basics and a parent's critical role in raising a toddler to be most helpful. If you did, would you please let us know? Drop us a line. Give us a call, even go to our Facebook page and make a comment. The broadcast is posted right there in today's feed. And if you missed any part of today's broadcast, as always, just go to drjamesdobson.org/Family Talk. Okay, one final announcement. If you haven't done so already, I hope that you will join us during this entire month of July and take our 30-day kindness challenge. It's being presented in partnership with our ministry friend, Shanti Feldhahn. 30 days of encouragement to improve any relationship with an email to your inbox every morning, packed with suggestions and other helpful hints for a more Christ-like, graceful behavior directed at someone meaningful in your life. Just go to drjamesdobson.org/kindness challenge. Look, in this day and age with so much division, uncertainty, and angst in the world, couldn't we all use a little more kindness? I want to tell you that I'm personally taking the kindness challenge this month, and it's really going well. I started on July 1st, but remember, you can actually start anytime. I'm honestly amazed how it has already enhanced the daily interaction I'm having with the person for whom I am doing it. And I had a conversation with Shanti Feldhahn about this recently, where we discussed how important it is to exercise the kindness challenge
for someone. We're not doing this to someone to make them more kind, but rather we're doing this for someone so that you can actually have the opportunity to see the kindness of God demonstrated through you in the life of someone else. So I highly recommend you get involved, even starting today. You could do this for 30 days starting from this day forward, July the 12th. But I encourage you to check this out. Shawnee Feldhahn is definitely right. A positive outlook with kind interaction can go miles to rekindling something or starting it for the first time. So more reports this month from me as we have time. But if you're doing the kindness challenge right now, I just want to encourage you, stay with it and check it out if you haven't done so already. I can guarantee you that you will not regret it. That's drjamesdobson.org/kindnesschallenge. Well, God's richest blessings to you and your family and your kids and your grandkids, too. Until next time, this is Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening and join us again for the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.